So this is Mary Ingleby interviewing Tim Gowing on the 30th of April 2013. No.
Going.
Oh, host.
Not
Gowing.
Gowing. Never.
No, really, Gowing.
That would upset everyone.
Would it? Okay, well, that's the first mistake.
It's
Let's
Gowing.
Start again.
It's as if there's no W. It's just Gowing.
Gowing. Yeah. Just Gowing. Okay, start again.
There was a story about your father told about being with a person called...
Coming.
Somebody coming. And
that's
said,
right.
They were coming and going.
That's right. As a
that's,
story.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry
start
about
again.
That,
no, it's fine. Let's get it right. Okay, so let's start again. Mary Ingleby interviewing Tim Gowing on the 30th of April 2013. So, Tim, if we could just start by you introducing yourself to me.
So, I'm ordinarily called Tim, and I was born in Gibraltar in 1939. And I lived on and off there till my parents retired in 1953. I went to boarding school in England in 1949 until 56. My father had an amazing colonial lifestyle, I would say. When you read about some of his stories in the Gold Coast and in Spain, and especially in Gib during the war, it is quite amazing what happened in those days.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's great. That's a very good start. So I thought we will just start with your father, actually. So perhaps you could just tell me a little bit about your father's family, what you know of them, where he came from.
Yes, the family came from Norfolk. And after my father came out of the army in the First War, he started in the motor business in Norfolk. He had three brothers. One farmed.
That's all right.
In Blowfield in Norfolk. There was another brother who went into the scaffolding business and started quite a well-known company called Acrow and ended up in Hong Kong as a director out there. Another brother became an accountant, and they lived in Manchester. And then there was another brother who also was in farming.
So what sort of a man, when you think about your father, what sort of a man was he?
I would say he was incredibly upright. I always remember... You can imagine in a place like Gib, especially at Christmas time, all these shops and various companies would arrive with presents at the door or send them, and he never would ever receive anything at all. So that was a fantastic man, really, in my view. He was very likeable. They were a very sociable couple, and they went to a lot of parties in Gib. It was a very social time, and this was one of the reasons why we had this lady called Phyllis Ferrugia, who came to our family to look after the three of us.
And did he, I mean, we're going to go back to the beginning of you know, when you, well, what you couldn't remember, sure you can't remember being born, but, you know, when you were little in Gibraltar. But just in retrospect, really, because this is what we're doing, talking about your father, I mean, did he talk to you at all when you were older about his career?
Very little, I would say. I learnt a huge amount from his book.
And when did you... When was the book written? Don't know.
73.
So when he was writing, he wrote the book himself, did he? Did he write it with somebody? Or?
Well, I think he related it to his great friend Cecil Callaghan.
The guy on the motorcycle.
Indeed,
thing.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So he obviously wanted to sort of put his memoirs down somehow.
Yes, I would say so. But he was quite a private man like that. It's funny how family life was in those days. You didn't have tremendous arguments and discussions about life over the dining table like people do now. It was very different, I think. And especially being at boarding school in England, you know, at holiday time when you went out to Jib, it was more fun and parties and beach parties and swimming and that sort of thing.
Yes, rather than talking about. But let's just go back to the book a minute. So were you aware that he was writing it?
Not at all.
So when did you find out?
I suppose when it was finished. Yeah.
So not after he died? He showed it to you while he was still alive?
I can't honestly remember, I'm afraid.
Well, obviously, you know, he was your dad, so you knew something about him. But tell me maybe what was surprising, when you read it.
Well, total surprise, really, especially his early life and in the Gold Coast, about which I really knew nothing at all.
And did your father die before your mother, or the other way around?
Yes, he died before.
So after he died, did the family talk about? Did your mother want to talk about?
Yes, she did. I mean, we discussed it much more, I think.
Yeah, that's often the case, because it keeps somebody around when you talk about it, doesn't it? Yeah. And did she tell you many stories about their life? Can you remember?
I can't.
No, it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
You always want to, you know, interview, you know, one wishes one had interviewed them, because they would have had extraordinary stories to tell.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, the fact that it's written down is excellent, really.
Absolutely. And presumably, because he was actually working for Colonial Service, did he have a lot of friends who worked for the Colonial Service? Do you remember that?
I don't know. I mean, the Colonial Secretary, obviously, he had a lot to do with, and the Colonial Hospital, good friends, and the Garrison Library and that sort of thing.
So, just a little bit more on your father, and then we'll talk a bit about what you can remember about Gibraltar yourself. But I'm trying to get an image of him in my head. From obviously we've got the photographs and we've got the book, which is pretty amazing, which is more than most people have. But what was he? What did he look like?
Well, I suppose you'd call him an upstanding man. He looked very good in uniform. He was very keen on golf. I mean, he played golf up until the age of about 81. And just a thoroughly good chap. I think you'd call them a real English gentleman, probably.
Yeah, that's a picture that I'm getting. Yeah. I mean, a sort of person who doesn't exist really anymore.
No, absolutely not.
And a bit of an adventurer, I think, as well, isn't it? In his earlier life, wasn't
Yes, indeed, yeah.
Well, there was this whole story that you were just telling us before we started the interview about the, you know, driving across Africa. I mean, that's... Tell me what you know about that.
Again, I've mostly learnt about that from what was written, but I think he was arrested. They had to build a raft to get across a river. I think the exhaust fell off and they had to wire it up with something. I mean, it was real pioneering days, really.
And did he do that just for fun?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah.
And at that time he was in Gold Coast, which is now Ghana, so he was a colonial policeman there.
Indeed, yeah.
So was this something that they did sort of on leave, do you think?
Yes, got special leave for that. But I think one of the permits didn't get through, which is why they were arrested.
So, how old would he have been then? Any idea? Let me phrase that another way. What about, I mean, did he go into the Colonial Service before he was married, do you think?
I think he did. They got married in 32. So they called it the, what was it called? Don't worry,
it's fine. What were you going to say? They called...
Well, the Gold Coast was called the something grave, wasn't it?
Oh, the white man's grave. Yes, it was, because of the, I don't know what it was. Was it cholera or So, no, it wasn't. Probably everything. It was. Although
I think my mother went out probably a year afterwards or something like that.
Right. So what about your mother? Where did she come from? What do you know about?
Well, she's also Norfolk. And I think they were living around Norwich. And I don't even remember where they met, presumably at something in Norfolk. And they got married in London, at All Souls, Langham Place, I think it was. Yeah.
Well, that's quite significant. They might, because that's the BBC church, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And I don't think everybody's allowed to get married there.
Really?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know.
No. That's interesting. And just, I mean, he'd also, obviously, he'd been a soldier in the First World War as well, hadn't he?
Indeed, yes, yeah. So, and he talked about India and Kashmir in particular, which he thought was absolutely stunning.
Right, okay, I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, because I'm just trying to trace, so when he was, he must have been quite a young man in the First World War. Was he born 1898 or something?
Yes.
So I've got it in there. Yeah, 1898. Yeah. So, yeah, he was really young.
Yeah.
And survived that. Extraordinary.
Yeah.
And then I'm just wondering what, I mean, we're only, you know, speculating here because we haven't got him to ask, unfortunately. But, you know, what made him want to then join the colonial police, I wonder? More adventure, maybe.
I think probably yes. He probably found the motor trade very boring, because even to spice up the motor trade, he started going to Brooklands, and he helped, I think, one of the leading drivers who used to work for Count Zabriskie, who was a millionaire who had a big fleet of Daimler-Benz cars. And Father was in one of those cars going round Brooklands at great speed when it caught fire. And there is a picture of him somewhere holding a lovely fire extinguisher trying to put out the fire.
Can you just explain what Brooklands is?
Brooklands used to be the premier motor racing circuit of England in those days, with a very steep bank. And all the great events in motor racing used to take place there.
Did you always have quite exciting cars as a family?
Well, he did, but really before I was around, there's some wonderful pictures of, I think he had a Bugatti and a French open tourer. And I still have in my possession a rather nice bronze silver eagle, which he had on the front of one of his cars.
Ah, those are the days.
Yes.
Proper motoring.
Yeah.
Yeah, must have been amazing, wasn't it? Yeah. So his one of the things you said he did talk about quite often was his time in Kashmir. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Well, he I don't know how long he was out there, but he liked India as I do, and I've been several times now. But I always remember him talking about Kashmir with the beautiful mountains behind and these amazing lakes where you could stay on houseboats and that sort of thing. And I think that still goes on in a small way, although it's a disputed territory.
So actually, they went, so it was first Gold Coast, and then it was Kashmir, and then Jib, is that right?
Well, no, the other, no.
The other way around.
Yes, the army first, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, so sorry, just say that to me again, so just give, because I haven't got it in my head what it is.
Army, which took in India. Palestine, I'm not sure. Yeah. Is that police, or is that...
Well, maybe he was in. He could have been in the army because, you know, there were soldiers in Pakistan.
I think he did. On commission, he went out to India. Rose to the rank of captain, and then I think it was 1919. He was he left and then joined the colonial service, where he did North Africa and Gold Coast.
Oh,
right. Right, okay.
Yeah, so starting, yes, I know nothing about the Palestine side at all, really.
So, I mean, obviously all that happened when he was a single man, anyway.
Yes,
he hadn't met your
mother,
you know. Yeah. Okay. So I'd like to talk, I mean, we're going to talk more about him, but, you know, in context of your memories of being in Gibraltar. So I know we've looked at a lot of old photographs today, which must have sort of jogged your memory a bit, really. I mean, when you think about Gibraltar, what comes into your mind? What do you think?
It was very exciting. I remember, for instance, when ration books were still ongoing in England, and obviously when I was on a holiday in Gib, I didn't use them. When I came back to England to school at our tuck shop, I could buy a huge amount of sweets, which was very exciting. At school in Gib, I went to Brimpton, which was run by a headmistress called Miss Simpson, run a bit like a prep school, and then when she retired, it was taken over by Mr. and Mrs. Prosser, who ran it also very successfully. My brother went to the Christian Brothers School in Gib, so they were the two places where we were.
So were they mixed schools? I mean, were they co-ed?
I think Brimpton was co-ed, but I think the Christian Brothers was male. Yeah.
And were there Gibraltarian children, or was it just British children?
No, mixture. Yeah.
So you were brought up with Gibraltarian children then as well?
Yes, a lot of friends. I mean, we belonged to Rosier Swimming Club, which was probably a great place to be, and I mean, there were hundreds of members, and you know, we met all our friends there. We had canoes and we did fishing as well as swimming.
And what was it, Rosier Swimming Club? Was it the sea or was it a pool?
It's a little bay, really. It has great history because Lord Nelson, when he died, was brought into Rosier Bay and kept there for a short time, I think, in a barrel of whatever.
Yeah, this comes up quite a lot, this story. Pickled, yes.
That's right.
Yeah. And people used to... Well, who told us last week about somebody? People used to drink it.
Well, the sailors.
Yes.
He was stored in a house. The barrel was put in a house in Rosier Bay.
Yeah.
It's still there, apparently. And the sailors broke in and drank all the rum because they wanted the spirit of Nelson.
Oh, the spirit of Nelson, that's right. So it was a club by the... It was on a beach, really, was it?
Well, no, it was all really concrete, so you swam off.
It was like a sea pool.
Yes,
yeah.
A sea pool.
I know,
indeed.
Yeah.
I remember one occasion when my mother, who was a great chatterbox, would be talking to someone just on the edge of the water, and I saw this octopus going ever closer to her. I always remember that.
Because it was just coming in from from the ocean.
Yeah, well, I mean, it, you know, being sea, there were lots of fish and sea urchins and whatever.
And did you speak any Spanish?
Very little, regrettably. It's this typical English thing of, you know, and Gib being very sort of British. I spoke very little because Phyllis, our nanny, was, you know, obviously fluent in English.
But I mean, I just in terms of your Gibraltarian friends, so they all spoke to you in English.
Oh yes. I mean, as they do now, they go from one to another all the time.
Yeah, it's exactly what I found when I'm interviewing them.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they'll shout out to their husband in Spanish, or
yes.
You know, move between the two. And when you went to people's houses, did they speak in Spanish or English?
I can't remember.
Let's talk a little bit about Phyllis, so how she came into your family and who she was and where she came from.
She was and is a Gibraltarian, She came to our family in 1937 to look after my brother Rupert, then myself and my sister Jane. And she's really been around ever since. She was originally a nanny, and then she also came to England in 1953 with my parents, and for a while lived with us, and then she decided she'd like to do housekeeping. So she went to several families in Norwich and Norfolk and that sort of thing. And then always, in a way, we were her family. She never married. She did have two sisters and a brother, some in England and some in Jib. So she eventually, because we had little connection with Norfolk, we decided she might like to come and live down here. So she actually moved into this village and became a housekeeper to several families here until she retired.
Oh, but obviously once... How long ago was that when you moved here?
We came here in 71.
And did she used to go back to Jib?
I think she has maybe only been once.
That's
really quite strange.
Isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah.
Isn't
she
it?
Has got one niece still there. And then three other nieces, but they're in France and Switzerland and other places.
And do you remember her talking to you about her life in Jib and Gibraltar?
Well, her life really was based in our house, because, you know, she lived in our house.
So she didn't talk about her sort of feelings about Gibraltar or anything like that? Or?
No, that she was an amazingly hard worker and a terribly loyal member, really, of our family. And that's really what we remember her by.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think that there's certainly people who want to leave Gibraltar as well, because it's so small.
Yes,
and,
yeah.
You know, you wonder if what it was like for her coming here. She must have thought, God, this is, you know...
Mm. But she, don't forget, she came, she was evacuated with us during the war.
So she
knew England quite well, and she was with us in England.
Right. Right, so she knew it quite well. And what about, tell me a little bit more then about her school, so what that was like, and you were pretty young then, it was like a primary school.
Mm.
Mm. And do you remember what sort of things you did, what lessons you had?
I think all the usual ones, really. I don't think there was any sport, because, you know, being so small, there was no way where you could... as part of school, do sport. I mean, swimming was the main thing, really.
Sounds pretty nice to me.
Yeah, and these great beach parties in Spain at weekends and things.
So why did everyone go over to Spain?
To get away from Jib being so small, and the beaches were more exciting, I suppose.
And when you went away to school for the first time, did you go back with your parents?
I think my mother probably took me.
And how did you go backwards and forwards?
We used to go initially by liner, the Union Castle or P&O, used to call in at Jib. And then after a while, British European Airways started flying to Jib. And it was an amazing flight. We would go take off from Northolt, fly to Bordeaux for lunch, Madrid for tea, and then eventually arrive in Jib. And these were in Viking two-engine planes. And they gradually went on to jets in the end.
And was that quite frightening, landing in Jib? Because I believe the airport's not...
It was exciting at that age. And the planes, we had great fun on the planes, because they were mostly all our friends and all school children. And BEA used to give out little bottles of dry sack sherry in those days to every passenger, and not many of them got to the parents.
You were very naughty. Gosh, how fun. That must have been such good fun.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So you must have really longed to come back to Jib, you know, school in...
Oh, yes, absolutely marvellous. You know, I mean, all holidays were nice from school, but that was extra exciting, really.
So how old were you? How old were you when you actually left?
In 53.
God. Well, because that's when your father left, yes, obviously. Yeah, yes,
yeah. 14, 15 or something. Mm.
53. Yes, something like that. Yeah.
And so did he leave because he was retiring, or did he leave?
Had to retire. Quite sad, really. You had to retire at 55 in the colonial service. Far too early.
Absolutely.
So he came back to Norfolk and obviously had to do something. He did a lot of charity work. He ran one big organisation that took all these... disabled people to camps, really, the, you know, like the Butlins and so on. At the end of the season, they would give over their whole premises for these people and all the carers, and that was a massive job that she used to run.
And he must have really, I mean, both your parents must have missed the life.
Oh, hugely, especially my mother, who was very social.
So did they go back to visit, do you think?
I don't believe they went back.
Maybe they went, there was quite a few pictures in the album of Spain. Perhaps they went back to Spain.
I don't think so.
Really?
No, I don't know. Have you seen them? Mm, I don't think really. They did. It's strange, really.
Mm, well, maybe it's just...
They went on holiday to, you know, all the usual.
He had
Italy.
A famous send-off, though, didn't he?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, so the great day came, and there's a picture of them at Four Corners. And he got on extremely well with the Spanish authorities, even during the 50s then. And the governor of Algeciras arranged for a police escort from leaving Jib right through to Algeciras and the boundary of the area, I think.
So was that, what, on the road?
Yes, actually on the road.
Fantastic. Yeah, and do you remember that? Were you with him?
No, I think I was at school. Yeah.
Are there any photographs of that?
Yes, there are. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Well,
fantastic.
Not of the outriders, but of them standing at Four Corners with all their friends, and then off they went.
But in his manuscript, there's quite an account of he was really touched by being escorted and all the way through the... region of Algeciras, I think.
Yes.
Well, he must have been a very popular policeman then.
Yes, I think he was.
Do you think there was a lot of crime?
No. Very, very little.
I mean, there are a few significant events that are mentioned in the memoirs, which I've got a list of, and I don't know if you can... If there's anything about these that you can remember, shall I just ask you and see? Well, the first thing is the Spanish Civil War. And the attacks in La Linea and Algeciras, and refugees. I mean, quite a few of the people I've interviewed, who are older than you, actually, but you know, they do remember refugees coming in from La Linea. Have you got any?
No. The only thing I remember Father telling me was when, forgotten his name, Churchill.
Rudolph. Randolph.
Randolph, who was a journalist, as you know, and he was always getting into trouble. And during the Civil War, he was in Malaga, and Father must have had a call and actually went to Malaga and put him in the boot to bring him back to Jib.
So he had to be kind of smuggled in?
Absolutely, yeah. Otherwise, he probably would have been arrested by the Spanish.
Gosh, that's extraordinary. I mean, he must have had quite a few instances where he had to pull people out. I can imagine.
Yeah. That's the only one I remember, really.
And that's pretty good. That is interesting. Oh, yes, which I just got here. Yes. So you've got here, he was on house arrest in Spain.
Well, they took his... he'd written an article, apparently, which was critical of Franco.
Ah, right.
And they... this police chief had taken his passport away, so he was virtually under house or hotel arrest, and somehow he'd been told to sort of tipped off to phone your father, I think. And then your father acted accordingly.
Right.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because he had, in a way, he was in a very powerful position, more powerful than the governor in some ways. He seems to be the man who was a bit, who had to, you know, actually do something, you know, rather than being...
Yes, yeah, that's true.
I think there was an interesting balance there, because at the end of the day, I mean, don't know if you've got any recollections about this, but the military during those, a lot of those years, virtually ran Gibraltar, and they cancelled the, postponed the legislative council, didn't they?
Mm.
So it was the military authorities were in the lead. In the
yes, yeah, all powerful, really. It was the relations between the governor and the military side and father and the police was sometimes a bit prickly, I know.
Yes, I can imagine, because he was the civil side.
Yeah,
he was, you know, a policeman like he would have been in the UK.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is different.
Yeah.
Hmm, how interesting. And there's also, I mean, obviously you were so little during World War II, but do you remember anything about Gibraltar, particularly perhaps when you came back, how it might have changed? Because, you know, obviously there were a lot more masses of military on the rock and fewer places to live, really, for most people.
Mm. I don't really. The only thing I remember was this German submarine coming into the bay with a white flag, surrendering, you know. But that's one of the few things I remember, really.
I suppose that, you know, you two being, you and your brother, boys, you must have probably, you know, talked about spotting boats and planes and all that sort of thing.
Did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I didn't ask you, actually, where you lived in Gibraltar.
We lived in a road called North Pavilion Road, but there were steps. It wasn't a road. It was the southern end of Gib. Really, it's a South Barracks area, and the Naval Dockyard has a north gate and a south gate, and we were just above the south.
And what was it like, the house?
Nice house, I think, sort of 5 or 6 bedrooms, quite high up. A nice garden that went round Bougainvillea on the wall, and a great view looking out over the harbour in one direction and out into the bay.
How lovely. And was it an old house?
I suppose not that old. I don't know, maybe 50, I don't know, 40s or something. Not sure. But of course we had you would see all the naval ships coming in and the cruise liners and that sort of thing, which was good.
That must have been amazing, especially watching them at night and things coming in. Love looking over a port.
Yes.
Something really interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, that sort of thing, I mean, just you describing the house, I mean, it must have been, you know, really difficult to be back in the UK, being cold and grim and, you know, no light.
Yes, my parents obviously missed that. I mean, we didn't as children, but they must have. But because coming from Norfolk and they retired back to Norfolk, you know, they knew the area and a lot of relations and that sort of thing.
That's true, because there's a plus side, yeah.
Did your father, there was one incident which is nicely described in his manual, about where there were some Australian troops which got a bit drunk in the town and and he called out the specials, and I think the press stirred it up a bit for your father. Did he ever talk about that?
Yes, he did.
What was your take on that?
Yeah, the police arrested some of these Australians who were drunk and had been causing chaos in town, and of course all their mates got to hear about it and laid siege to the police station. I think his name was Harold Wall, and he was a journalist of the Gibraltar Chronicle. And he had contacts in England, and he sent a report through to one of the British papers. So it got a bit of publicity here. And there was even a house, in the House of Commons, there was a question asked about this incident. And I think Father had quite a sticky time. There was an inquiry and he was exonerated in the end. But during that period, it must have been a bit nerve-wracking.
And what were they doing? They were just run amok, really?
Well, in all fairness, there were Australian troops going back to Australia after the war, and they'd had 3 days or 4 days cooped up on a liner, on a troop ship, I suppose. So the first port of call, like anyone would, you know, they went out for a drink, and a lot of them had too much and started fighting and upsetting and causing chaos.
Because I think, you know, from people I've interviewed who remember Gibraltar at that time and well, before the war, you know, that it was very rowdy. I mean, there were terrible fights in Main Street quite often. People being thrown out of windows like, you know, well, like the Wild West, the sailors fighting.
Really?
Yeah. Everybody, all Gibraltarians without exception have said that.
Yeah.
That they weren't, you know, that they used to have to stand back in Main Street because maybe it's an urban myth. But it was that whole thing about sailors, you know, yes. Having to, they used, two people said this actually, about, because they lived in Humphreys, which I think is very close to the dockyard. So they used to literally watch these sailors weaving their way. And then the joke was they had to go up the gangplank sober, you know, they had to be sober. So they'd literally kind of completely sober up at this last minute. Sounds quite funny.
Because the Gibraltarians tend to live near Main Street in the town area, whereas we were way out.
Yes, so perhaps, you know, but I would have thought your father still would have had to deal, perhaps go and deal with it.
Probably, yes. But that was the most, you know.
Yeah, that was some
notorious one.
You also talked about actually you said something funny when you didn't have the tape recorder on about the day you had your tonsils out.
Oh yes, like many children. They were causing trouble, so the surgeon's name was Dr. Skelton Brown, personal friend of the family, and he took my tonsils out, and as occasionally happens, I think 1 in 1,000, they bleed, so they have to insert rubber plugs. So my parents were obviously worried when this was happening, and on that very day, an army officer who was, in fact, living just near the garrison library, was obviously in terrible debt, and he shot his two children and killed them, and his wife, who died, but he didn't die, he injured himself. So Father had to deal with those two things on the same day.
It was a terrible story. And did you know that? You knew that at the time?
No,
or they
not
told
at
you
all.
Much later?
Years later, probably.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. Because, I mean, it must have been a huge variety of things. He had to deal with everything from fighting to something like that to, you know... I mean, did you ever... I mean, we have got something here, haven't we, about... I'm just thinking about whether he had to had anything to do with espionage and German agents, Spanish workers, that sort of thing.
I think he did, but, you know, it's in the book, whatever.
I think what happened there was the civilian police force, there was the military, and then there was a security police which manned the borders. And I think your father was... they had a committee, and your father was chairman of the committee, I think, to very much coordinate it and try and... I think there was some friction to start with, but... under your father's auspices, I think it ended up being a really good group.
I mean, he did bring quite a lot of new things, you know, into GIB through the police, and the police launches was one of the things he brought in, because there was an awful lot of smuggling going on, and they got one launch, and then they ended up with another two or three. They were painted red, and we used to go out on them, which was great fun with the police every now and again.
They must have gone really fast.
Yes, in those days.
Well, there's some photographs of those, aren't there?
Yes.
The police launches. Yes, so he must have been quite proud of them.
Oh, yes. It was great.
And did you sort of, your friends, you know, ever think, oh, you know, be careful, you know, your dad's a policeman, that sort of thing? Do you remember that?
Never mentioned or thought about.
I just wondered how much, you know, his work impacted on family life.
Very little, which is probably why, you know, we didn't know an awful lot about it. Like a lot of fathers, I mean, you know, you arrive home for tea or dinner or whatever, and you just sort of get on with family life.
And subsequently, I mean, have you talked to your sister about it, or, you know, did your family talk about him and his life at all?
Yes, a little bit. You know, when we meet people who are now living in England, who we see every now and again, and friends of Jib people as well, we do talk about it. I think my two sons are certainly very interested and have read this book, you know.
Well, perhaps they'll do some more research at some point. Yeah. Right, I'm just going to stop for a minute.